You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. We can all relate to how good it feels when we receive encouragement and accolades for a job well done. For a university president, there is no better confirmation of an excellent job performance than for the Board of Trustees to unanimously offer an extended contract. My guest is Dr. Rick Bailey, president of Southern Oregon University. He's a retired Air Force colonel, retiring after 24 years, which included more than 3,500 flight hours. Dr. Bailey arrived here in January 2022 after leading the resurgence of Northern New Mexico College as its president. In January of this year, SOU's Board of Trustees unanimously extended Dr. Bailey's contract, acknowledging his extraordinary leadership of this campus. This year, his leadership skills have been put to an extraordinary test. The Trump administration has accelerated its war on what it derisively calls woke education. It has caused fear across the country with its targeting of immigrant students. It has defunded the Department of Education and implemented widespread cuts in federal funding of higher education programs. Now, student enrollment has declined, and that has deeply impacted all educational institutions across Oregon. This is indeed a test of leadership. Welcome to the Exchange, Dr. Bailey.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. Happy to be with you.
So we're going to have a conversational sandwich.
Sure.
We'll start with a focus on what's going well. Mm-hmm. We'll deal with some of the more challenging issues, and then we'll end with a more positive outlook for the future. That's okay
Great.
With you?
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's start with your first 3 years at SOU. Mm-hmm. What went well?
I think the thing I'm most proud of over our first 3 years are the linkages and the family ties that we've created. And this is going to sound syrupy sweet, but it's the bonds that we created between students, faculty, staff, and community. And I will say, you know, knowing the meat that's coming in the sandwich conversation here soon, I think that those bonds have been absolutely critical to everything that we've had to weather. Like, had we not built those relationships and that trust, then I don't think we could have persevered given the challenges that we face. Now, let me also say, and not to be overly humble, trust is something that is that you have to nurture all the time. So it can be taken away in a snap, and so I'm conscious of that. But I'm really, really grateful for the trusting relationships we built.
Absolutely, and that's in short supply nowadays.
Yeah.
So sort of like a family atmosphere that you've built here.
Yeah. There's a really interesting dynamic where, you know, if you attend one of our Board of Trustees meetings, we hear from the head of the Faculty Senate, we hear from the head of the Staff Assembly, we hear from the head of student government, we hear from the heads of both of our union partners. And all five of those leaders will say, hey, here are the things that we're struggling with. And here are things that we disagree with Rick on, we'll just air it out. And somewhere in there, there is a hey, but we're all in this together, right? If we have that, everything else can be overcome. Like when you start with hey, but we know that everyone is trying to do the right thing for the institution. Everyone is coming at our challenges with a heart-centered nature. Well, then I that is something I absolutely better not take for granted, because everything else can be built from that.
It sounds like there's a sense of trust and transparency.
Mm-hmm. And it's a work in progress, right? So there is something, and it's not SOU. I think it's baked into the academy, the higher education in general. But if we're not careful, if there's an absence of information, if there's a void for whatever reason, then and we're not careful, then the rumor mill and other things can start to fill that hole. And unfortunately, sometimes there is, okay, well, then there might be something sinister going on, right, if there, without that lack of information. So I think we've been intentional about trying to be as absolutely transparent as possible. I know we're going to get into the challenges we've had this summer, but a good example of that is we were given a monumental, almost seemingly impossible task in terms of this budget crisis at a time when most of our faculty were gone for the summer. The timing could not have been worse. And so transparency becomes very challenging, because some of those faculty came back to a new environment, right? So, yeah, it's certainly not something that I would say we have mastered. It's something we're definitely still working on.
Okay, well, we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
We have a number of challenges we have to talk about, but your administration has sought ways to build bridges across the generational divide by integrating the community with the campus,
mm-hmm.
and also to diversify revenue streams through the retirement housing project.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's funny. I think this might have been something that I shared with your listeners a while back, a couple of years ago. When the history books are written about this project, the older adult living community, I joke that it's going to seem like we knew what we were doing. And yet I will say humbly that it really started as a revenue. We're like, we've got to find ways so that we don't put more and more burden on the backs of students, right? We can't just rely on state funding and tuition. We got to think differently. We got to think entrepreneurially about what we do. And so this idea was born from that. Like, hey, what if we engage in a public-private partnership? Let's build a facility to welcome older adults to the campus, give them opportunities for education, and with what that partnership looks like, create a new revenue stream, right? So I will admit to your listeners that it started as a fiscal, the answer to a fiscal challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And yet over the couple of years that we've really started to build this, like all these other benefits, that it will seem like I knew what I was doing, I think are going to be organically brought into the fold. And so when we think about the benefits that come from intergenerational connectivity, by the way, not just for the 18 to 24-year-old college student, but for those seniors.
Yes.
And what it does for them and their quality of life. The linkages between a business student at SOU and someone who is living in this facility who has a lifetime of connections in a certain business or a certain industry, now it's not just advice and mentorship, but it could be sponsorship. I'm going to introduce you to my network, and now there are opportunities for those students once they graduate. Like all of these other things that I think are starting to fall into place in a really exciting way. One thing I have shared, and I loved it from the beginning, was this idea of an SOU auxiliary. And I equate it to when you go to a hospital and there's an information desk there, and there's always someone, a retiree who's there, and they're a volunteer, and they're out of the goodness of their heart. And you engage them when you are at your most vulnerable, because either you're sick or someone you really love is sick, and yet they have a smile on their face. And so the thought was, what if we took that idea and blew it up for a campus? And so now we could have 150 to 200 ambassadors, basically that smiling face, but all over the campus. And so I've challenged our facilities team. And so Leon and Jim, I owe you lunch if you're listening to this. Hey, imagine the campus is able to accommodate a bunch of golf carts. And so we have all these auxiliary members with electric golf carts powered by our solar arrays that provide basically a free campus Uber service, right? And so these are just volunteers who are, especially the first couple of weeks of a term, they're taking students all over the campus. Anytime you see one of these carts, it's basically an open invitation to make a connection. You know, it's those kind of ideas that I think can really reshape the campus in a beautiful way.
That's a nice little idea.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen those yet.
Yeah. No, I don't know that anyone's doing that yet. But I will say, it's great when it's my idea. Like, oh, this sounds really good. It's another thing when we try to put it into place. But I'm confident that we'll find a way.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Rick Bailey, president of Southern Oregon University. So, Dr. Bailey, you have strong leadership skills and a strong leadership background, having served in the military. How has that prepared you for the test of leading university faculty and staff and thousands of young students through these unprecedented challenges?
It's a great question, Mike. I will also tell you, not to be overly humble, that's also a work in progress. The military is such, by design, it is such a different organization. And higher education, that they couldn't be more organizationally diverse. The military really relies on rigid, defined structure in a very two-dimensional way. And I understand it because of the nature of what the military does. When you're talking about life or death situations, there's no room to collapse. Like, it has to be in the moment.
Right.
Universities, by contrast, are far more the leadership required, I think, is far more nuanced and far more collaborative, and far more welcoming and far more humble, right, in a way. And I will tell you that I have loved that challenge and I've loved that transition. I think it has helped me grow as a leader. And you know, if you ask our students, faculty, and staff, they'll tell you that's a work in progress too. But I love the fact that I get to serve with a community of people, all of whom are really committed to helping SOU get to a better place, and so there is no lack of input, and that helps us make better strategic decisions.
So, what are you most proud of through your first three years here at SOU? Well, let me preface it with this. Do you remember where you were and how you felt when you first learned of the unanimous decision of the board to extend your contract?
You know, it's funny, Mike. I didn't really dwell on it. I appreciate the way you've introduced the segment, and I think it was really about, okay, look, you have a chance to continue to serve here, and so I immediately thought of what are the goals that we need to get to the finish line in these next 3 years, right? So my contract runs through the end of June 2028, and I will be frank with your listeners that to me I see that as, okay, what are the things that we need to get done, and given the challenges of the environment, right, a contextual environment. I know that there are still things that we can do in a positive way, because we're already doing those things, but in a positive way to move us forward and to provide that legacy for students. You know, we're 153 years old, our school, and I see my role as a caretaker. And I, again, not to be overly humble, but my goal is that someday, and hopefully it's 20 years from now, not 3 years from now, but someday I'm going to hand this over to someone, and my hope is that I can then, we as a community can look back and say, you know what, we did a lot of really good things for this school and really set it up for the next 153 years.
Okay, so we've got about 2 minutes left,
okay. And
I'm going to ask you for your elevator speech for why SOU is a great option for students who are trying to navigate an uncertain future.
Beautiful. Two things, love and respect. So we all of us as institutions try to find the, what's the thing that makes us special? What's the thing that differentiates us from other institutions? And, you know, if I talk about, hey, we have world-class academic programs and we have amazing athletic programs and we have incredible student experiences, all that's true. And I'm not lying. I mean, I'm not bragging. That's genuine. But there are a lot of schools who do really well in those areas. The thing that I think that we do better than anyone else, I think we create, and it's all in acknowledging that is a work in progress, but we are intentional about creating an environment where every single person, no matter who they are, is worthy and deserving of love and respect. And we've created that environment and have embraced that environment so that in that uncertain world, and as prospective students are navigating it, they are going to know that they have a home with us. And that's a unique talent, and makes it such a special place.
Well, love and respect are two essential components for a community or a campus of belonging.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, to echo the words of John Powell, so beautifully put. Belonging is really the key to the ballgame, and when you have an entire community committed to that, you can move mountains. And so that's in a microcosmic way. I think that's one of the things that we're trying to do at the university, in the hopes that that can be extrapolated, right? That it becomes a touch point for a much larger community conversation. And we're not alone. Others in our community are doing the same.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the fact that student enrollment is down.
Yep.
And federal options for students to afford college have changed. There's a lot to talk about.
Yes,
sir. My guest is Dr. Rick Bailey, president of Southern Oregon University. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Dr. Rick Bailey, president of Southern Oregon University. Dr. Bailey, before the break, we were having a really good talk about all the good stuff that's happening here at SOU.
Right.
And we kind of steered toward the drop in student enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
Federal funding is, uncertain.
Right.
There are some challenges, and your university now has a new downsizing plan.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. There was a study done by EAB, which is a nationally recognized authority in strategic studies about higher education. And they shared that there really are these three phases that have happened if you look writ large at universities across the country. And 20 years ago, the mantra was more with more. We can do everything, right? Let's try to – the resources were abundant. We can do everything. Enrollment was abundant. Then about 10, 15 years ago, the mantra became more with less. Like, let's try to do everything that we were doing, even though resources are dwindling. That's problematic. And now we're in a phase where institutions are having to grapple with less is less as a mantra. And that is, hey, look, the resources aren't about to change dramatically anytime soon. So what are the things that we need to do as an institution to live within our means? That is a incredibly unpopular challenge to have to face, because everything that we do as an institution, one, is done by people we love, and two, is of really, really high caliber. Like, there's not something that is an easy, okay, we can point a finger and say, we're not doing well at this, so let's... And so the less is less mantra kind of became the driving force. We understood all the things that you mentioned in the question. We understand that state support is just not where it is. Oregon now ranks 46th in the country in terms of support for public universities. That's crazy to me. We're in the bottom five as of states. And by the way, that's not because legislators don't care. It's because legislators are trying to put out all these other fires and respond to all these crises. We'll talk about that in a second. The federal government and the intentional dismantling of LBJ era initiatives that were designed to help especially low-income students get to and through college are being, they're being dismantled. That is what's creating uncertainty. I will tell you, for all the listeners out there, there are still things that are vibrant and strong. So Pell Grant is one of those things we were worried about, but it's still strong. So for prospective students, there is still a lot of money out there to go to college. And we encourage you to fill out your FAFSA and start that process. But for low-income students and programs like TRIO and McNair and others are being targeted, we've got to find a way to remind students that there's still a home. There's still, even for low-income students, there's still a pathway, but it's made it more difficult. The last thing I'll say is your comment about enrollment. There's a demographic cliff. They call it the demographic. There are far fewer students in high school now than there were 20 years ago. That's true. It's not as acute in Oregon as it is in other states. So I think it's something that we can overcome. But I think the bigger challenge for us is that there is a growing misperception about the value of a four-year degree. And the data is so – and yes, I'm biased, Mike, but the data is so convincingly clear and overwhelmingly clear that it, without question, a four-year degree is worth its value.
Okay. So first of all, you must have been looking at my notes because you just answered one of my questions.
No, I can't even see that far. So,
but here's to that point. When you said that Oregon ranks 46 in funding, when we look up the pipeline, K-12 in this state is in crisis, it seems.
Yeah.
When you talk about reading and writing scores. So whether or not we say there's value in higher education, which of course there is, are we preparing enough students for that?
Great question. Yeah, so I want to be careful to our colleagues in K-12 because I will tell you that they're working their tails off to answer this question. There are things that have exacerbated their challenges. COVID is a great example, right? And the effects. And I know there's a lot of studies about that. I would also say that as a state, there are things that we can do better. I said this publicly recently, and it was seemingly somewhat controversial. But I said, you know, we as a state, I think we're suffering from a generational hangover, and what I mean by that is that for 100 years in this state, we had an industry that where people without a high school diploma could generate a really successful career. And that industry, and by the way, nothing wrong with that industry, but it's had to evolve. And so those jobs aren't the same anymore. And so as a state, the economy has had to adjust to not being dependent on one industry. By the way, I would equate Oregon's timber industry with New Mexico's oil and gas industry. Same story. And so what happens is you have generations of people whose relationship to education was fundamentally different, and now it has to change. In order for us to climb out and build an economic future, a prosperous economic future, education is the key to the ballgame. And yet, our recognition of that as a state hasn't caught up with that reality.
100%. Now, of course, we now live in the sixth industrial revolution, and AI is impacting every industry.
Yeah.
And so the pace of innovation is accelerating exponentially, as is the pace of obsolescence.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, you brought up the issue of all the things that we're doing and that we have to stop doing some things, right? I think the other warning sign for us, by the way, not just SOU, for every institution, has to be, you know, the famous study that students who are in grade school right now, half the jobs that are going to be available to them haven't been invented yet, right? So it means that as an institution, we can't think of our academic model like we did in the 1980s. We can't do that. We have to actually be thinking about what are the linkages that go across disciplines. What are the ways in which we build student capacity and intellectual curiosity so that no matter what their path looks like after they graduate, they're going to be able to adapt to this really dynamic environment? That's a fundamentally different. So it's not now. It's not about we need you to memorize these dates and we need to memorize these formulas and we need you to be able to. Now it's about we need you to be able to imagine. We need you to be able to create. We need you to be able to, because the problems and challenges are going to be so complex that you're going to have to build those habits of mind to adapt to that environment.
Speaking of which, because of the budget cuts, because of the downsizing, you've had to make some unpopular decisions.
Yeah.
And you even cut your own salary.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't want to bring a lot of attention to that, but I think we all knew that we had to contribute to this solution. And so across the board, we have faculty members and staff members and administrators, and everyone's been part of this solution. And by the way, that's one of those things that we do to demonstrate that everyone's in this together. I think not just symbolically, but I think culturally, it's important for us to recognize that.
My guest is Dr. Rick Bailey, president of SOU. An appellate court has ruled that the Trump administration can send troops into Portland. Mm-hmm. Now, that case is likely to end up in the Supreme Court, but what do you say to students who fear the possibility of federal agents on campus?
Yeah, this is a really tricky one. And we have students who have questions about immigration agents and others who may be on campus. We have a very we have a very delicate line that we have to balance. One, we are a public institution, so we are beholden to federal and state law, right? We have to comply with that. Sometimes federal and state law aren't in agreement, right? As you mentioned in Portland. So, and so we have to be conscious of allowing the courts to do what the courts are doing now, right? And rely on that. At the same time, we recognize that in order for students to succeed, they have to know that they're in a safe environment, right? It's Maslow's hierarchy, right? And so without that, it creates real problems for us. What we've instructed our faculty, staff, and students is that, hey, if they ever saw federal agents on campus or going into a classroom, that they need to be directed to the office of the president, right? That shouldn't be – faculty members shouldn't have to be the ones to determine how to deal with that, right? That's for me to take on and for our office to take on and general counsel to take on, and so that's what we'll do.
Okay. Send them to the colonel.
That's right. That's right.
Well, you obviously believe that there are sunnier days ahead.
Yeah.
What do you envision on the other side of this storm?
So, you know, it's interesting. About three and a half years ago, I thought to myself, hey, you know, if someone could just give us a $400 million gift, it would solve all our problems. Because we would take 4% off of that, and that would be $16 million, and that would be a revenue stream. We could just do everything we do.
You hear that, Phil Knight?
Yes, yeah. If you're listening, sir, please. I'll give you my email. But a really dear mentor actually helped me recognize something, and that is that had we not gone through the challenges that we've gone through, we wouldn't have built the trust, the familial bonds, the other things that we and we've necessarily had to become a smaller, more focused institution. But it has actually set us up so that if the $400 million comes today, it's totally different, right? And so I'm not saying that I'm excited that that's coming. I'm saying we are in a position to take more advantage of the things that we know are going to come our way. Philanthropically, 10 years ago, we were raising about $2.5 million a year, roughly. This last year, we raised 14. And that's kind of the new normal now for us. I mean, so we're raising. There are so many people out there in our community committed to our institution's success and, more importantly, to our students' success, that their generosity is speaking volumes. And that because we have made the necessary changes that we've made, it means that those dollars now are extending further than they would have 5-10 years ago. So I'm optimistic about the recognition that what we do really matters. If I can say one other piece on this. A 2019 Echo Northwest study found that Southern Oregon University generates $282 million in economic activity per year, 282. The state of Oregon, their investment in us, this last year, was $32 million. And so for the mathematicians in your listening audience, what is that, 9-to-1? So for every dollar the state is investing in us, we're generating $9 in economic impact. And so to me, it's so simple. If we want a more thriving Oregon, then your public universities are engines of economic prosperity, but we've got to stop starving them. Let's do the things that we need to do to get those engines to supercharge.
And you've created the community to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we have about 90 seconds left.
Okay.
What's top of mind for you this week, this month, and by the end of this year?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Mike. I would say this, and this is where all of the JPR listeners can help us. We, in addition to the state and the federal government, all the challenges, there are things that we can control ourselves, and that really is enrollment and retention. How do we bring students into SOU, and how do we give them the tools that they need to succeed? I would ask every listener out there, and I'm going to put the challenge out, sometime over the next 6 months, Reach out to someone, family, connection, and let a prospective student know that there is a home waiting for them at SOU.
Oh, that's a beautiful message.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Well, I appreciate you coming and sharing your vision and, of course, the challenges that we're facing right now.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey. Thank you, Mike.
My guest was Dr. Rick Bailey, president of Southern Oregon University.